Okay, let's move on then to touch on our third round pick, Austin Waites, who doesn't really have much of a track record. He signed so late, and you know, obviously, as I've mentioned a couple of times, if you follow Cat's Corner, they're really excited about him joining Tri-City and helping them make the push for the playoffs because he's a pretty good overall hitter. What do you guys think? I know, Tim, you didn't really rank him because you haven't seen anything from him. We're pretty consistent, it seems, except Brooks, you have him as a four. What was your thinking there?
Well, at the time, he hadn't really played hardly at all. So, and based on scouting reports, I wasn't sure personally if he was going to hit for enough power. I knew he could hit, and I knew he was fast. But his numbers so far have impressed me like none other. I have been most impressed with recent performances out of Austin Waites of all the other prospects. He has shown a whole lot more speed than I expected. And then just today, he hit a home run to center field. That center field is 412 feet, and he hit the backdrop wall. So it was definitely a whole lot farther than 412 feet. So he's got more power than I expected. He's got a whole lot more speed than I expected. There's still question marks as far as where he's going to play. There's been reports that the Astros view him as a second baseman. And then there's reports that he can play any of the three outfield positions. Of course, he has more value as a second baseman because that's a more defensive-minded position. And if he's able to provide the offensive production that he could, that would be great. But my four is probably a whole lot higher right now because of his
His recent performance has been incredible. The sample size is so small that you don't want to take much from it. But what impresses me most in this sample size, we're talking about 11 games here, 33 at-bats. He's stolen 9 bases, and he hasn't been caught stealing once. That's more than a lot of players would get in their entire season and in terms of base running value. This is just in 11 games. The reports I have on him, I've seen varying things, but some reports have him as basically a five-tool player, and that's really rare from a college player because usually they're more polished guys who get by on their skills, and they don't have as high of ceilings as guys who are taken out of high school. And I've got some reports, you know, they vary, like I said, but I've got some reports that he has above average power, above average ability to hit, you know, above average defense, and then as high as 70, which is plus, for his speed. So he may have one of the highest all-around ceilings of any of the picks in this draft. Then he comes out with this incredible performance to start out his pro career, and it's pretty impressive. So he could have a very meteoric rise next year.
Well, yeah, sample sizes and everything from what I've seen.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing with him. You know, from what I've heard is he's got that hit tool that scouts like to talk about, and that he's just a solid, solid hitter. And that means that he does have power and in that he can hit for a pretty high average. But if you think about it, you know, a guy with his speed that can do so much and takes walks and knows how to steal bases, you know, if he hits 330, 340, he's a superstar on the level of Tony Gwynn, even if he only hits 10 home runs a year. I don't know, I'm obviously not ready to put him on that level. But, you know, it's interesting to think about his skill set and his speed in that he doesn't really need the power. If he can hit for a high average because he beats balls out, he hits a lot of doubles, and he's able to steal bases at a high success rate.
Right. And the guy I keep thinking about in that is because of his positional questions. Let's say he does end up being a left fielder, which some people have said he may end up doing because he's supposed to be a little bit raw and not have much experience in center field or second base or any of those positions. So let's say he ends up being a left fielder. The player I keep comparing him to is Carl Crawford.
Mm-hmm.
And I, from some of the reports that guy, it sounds like he has those kinds of tools. And obviously he's a long way from his ceiling, but if that's his ceiling, that's a star player.
Yeah, that's a pretty good player. I know I've been really high on Waits for a while now, even though we got into a little bit of a Twitter fight, which, you know, it's whatever. He's since taken it down. It was misunderstanding. But, and I don't know if I can be, he can be my man crush if he's going to fight with me on Twitter.
Wait, you have to give some, you can't just say that.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
More detail on that.
I don't know the story, David.
Okay, so he posted an update that said something like, I just passed 100 followers or something like that, and, you know, was congratulating himself on that. So I tweeted, being the somewhat funny guy I am, that, oh, yeah, you just, you know, you're playing up that, and, you know, you had your debut with Tri-City when you went, like, 3-for-3 or whatever he did. And, you know, it's called a modesty, Austin. You know, you should learn that. And he came back and was really upset and was like, you don't know me. You don't know, you know, I know modesty. You don't know what you're talking about. You know, wait until you get to know me first before you say things like that. And so I you know, calmed him down. I was like, look, dude, I was just joking. You know, it's what I do. I forget context and people may not know it's a joke. Yada, yada, yada. And the next morning I woke up and he had deleted the tweet when he was all mad. So I don't know. it was a big
sounds
misunderstanding,
like,
but
I was like, we need to have an interview with him.
I know. We need to
evolve because you might piss him off.
I know.
I'm like on Twitter, just, you know, clicking for updates constantly, trying to see what's going on. I think it's hilarious. So I'm just like rolling on the floor laughing.
Because I'm picking a fight with some of our minor leaguers. So.
Way to go, Dave.
Yeah. Well, you know, it also shows the power of TCB that as soon as he found out I was a writer for the site, he took down the offending tweet. It'll make the media mad at you.
Good thing it was after he'd already saw it. Otherwise, you would have seen that you were in an Astros fan.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
He may have asked for more money because of you, Dave.
Oh, I know.
You cost Drake McLean another $50,000.
So, is there anybody else from this draft class that you guys have liked what you've seen out of them or been a little disappointed by what you've seen out of them?
I did want to make a quick note. I know some people are really high on Chris Wallace because of his performance. I just want to note that this guy is 22 years old and he's playing in rookie ball against pitchers that are like you know, 3-4 years younger than him. You would expect an advanced college hitter like Chris Wallace, who was a catcher out of the University of Houston, to beat up on pitchers like that. So, in factoring that it's a really good hitter's part, and just wait and see what he does against higher level competition before you jump on the bandwagon too quickly with him.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You know, he is coming from a pretty advanced college program that I believe Rainer Noble is still the coach there, and he's one of the better college coaches in the country. So, you know, you know what you're getting out of the player. You know he's been taught pretty well, and that's a program that's put out some good major league players in the past. So it's really hard to get a handle on what he's going to do.
Well, I think what I liked about him is that he's got some on-base skills, and he's got some power. And, again, because he's a catcher, I don't know about his defensive abilities. You know, what I'm seeing, he's got 990 fielding percentage in the minors. You know, take that with a grain of salt as well. But if he can stay a catcher and be a good defensive catcher and still post around a 700 OPS, that's pretty good for a catcher. And that's why I kind of probably rate him a little bit higher than some of the other guys here.
Well, he did, I mean, since advancing to Tri-City, he has got his OPS over 700, which is okay for a catcher. He's playing now in Tri-City, which is the New York Penn League, which, as we've discussed a little bit recently, that could be on par with the same level of competition as, you know, the Sally League. because we're talking about a lot of college athletes and who are pretty much at the same age or older than a lot of guys that are in low A. But he still has displayed a little bit of power with two home runs. Although, yes, Tri-Cities home park is a little bit of a hitter's park. But, I mean, he's done all right. I'm not going to say that I'm extremely high on him and saying that he's a really great prospect by any means. But he is someone to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I don't want to say that he's not a prospect or that I was trying to actually be down on him. I'm just saying be cautious with taking too much out of his numbers at rookie ball because of the level of competition that he's facing is so much lower than his skill level.
That's well, definitely true. I mean, he is playing it, like, his Greenville numbers are definitely in below his level. So, I mean, I definitely agree with you.
Well, and the other thing to consider is guys like him, I mean, they're organizational depth, yes, but they don't have to make the major leagues with the Astros. You know, if he puts up a season next year where he's at Lexington or Lancaster and he hits like crazy because either he's under a level for his age or he's in a great hitter's park, you could fool some team into taking him as the centerpiece of a trade or, you know, that second piece that gets the deal done. Because he plays a premium defensive position, and he's got a little bit of a bat. And you know, that's the kind of thing that it never hurts to have players, and it never hurts to have players performing well, because there are so many options of things you can do down the road.
Speaking of captured depth, I don't know what you guys were smoking, but it must have been really good to read Bobby Williams as a C prospect. I actually had him as a non-prospect. I guess I'd kind of see what you guys are thinking on that one. Because, I mean, he doesn't hit, he doesn't walk, and he's 21. You know, I could throw up some stats here, but, you know, I don't think I need to. I don't know what you guys see in him.
His name's Bubby. Come on. Bubby. That should get him a C grade just based on his name alone.
No, he doesn't. No. No. Shirley gets an A because of a movie quote.
Yes.
Bubby Williams does not. I'm sorry. I live in the South, so it does not impress me.
For me, grade C, like the free rating we have there, is almost a catch-all for any guy who's going to stay in the organization and get a chance to prove himself. So, you know, it's not something where I was really looking at it too closely. I know he started out hot, so that's probably when I gave him that ranking. Kind of fell off later in season, so.
And I have to agree with that. Like, he really did start off really hot. He hit 5 home runs in Greenville where, yeah, he's an older prospect for that league, and then went on to got promoted up to a Sally League because of injury. But the thing is he was drafted in the 11th round. That's not to say that he's a high upside guy or anything like that, but the Astros organization at least feels somewhat, you know, a little bit about him. Otherwise, they wouldn't have drafted him, you know, with, I guess, that would have been last year, probably, what, their 11th pick overall, or 13th, or something like that. So, I mean, they honestly view him a little bit higher, or at least see some potential in him.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, I ranked him the same as I did Chris Wallace and Roberto Pena, and I think there was one other catcher I had as a 3 guy. You know, Rene Garcia would kind of fall into that category for me. As guys that are okay, you know, they're obviously good enough to play catcher at some level in the minor leagues, in the low minor leagues, but they're not enough of a prospect to really look at them advancing through the system. So, you know, you give him a grade a C because maybe some guy gains 10 pounds in the offseason and starts, you know, really hitting the ball. Or maybe he's just that good defensively that he can move up and be that kind of backup caddy to a more high-profile guy like Ben Heath. I think Frederico Hernandez, and I think he's in Lancaster right now, is the same way. So, you know, there's just not catchers are more valuable than first basemen, so I tended to rank them a little higher, even if they don't have the same upside as somebody like, I don't even know, Cody Hins.
Maybe there's a little bit of bias when you see a guy who has the big hot streak like Bobby Williams did. You see, and this probably isn't even accurate to anything statistical, but when you see that happen, you say, this guy has got a period where he's hitting all these homers, and you know, he's capable of doing this. So you wonder if maybe if there's some inconsistency in his game or something that he needs to refine, that he might have more potential down the road.
And he did it at the very beginning of the season. And so you have to wonder, since he's playing, you know, a position like catcher that is so, you know, physically demanding, if he just hasn't developed that stamina yet where he can do it long term.
You've just got all minus cool points in my book. Bobby Williams, okay. Let's look at this for a second here. Bobby Williams in 2 years has a 604 OPS. Chris Wallace in 1 year has an 847. With 10 home runs, Bobby Williams in 2 years has hit nine. And, might I add, his fielding percentage is .971, while Chris Wallace's is .990. So I think, small sample size, though, Chris Wallace is shown to be the better defensive catcher and the better hitter. I don't see it.
I think he's better. I would rate him as a better prospect, but at the same time, I think they're both great seeds, so, you know, I'm not going to really differentiate to that fine of a level. Like, maybe Chris Wallace is a 3.25, and Bobby Williams is just a 2.75 or something like that.
Bobby Williams, I mean, show me something next year for me to even consider him a one. And one's not a prospect, so he better show me something, or he's a zero. What's zero released?
he really will have to show something next year, but I mean, obviously the Astros view him, you know, pretty decently. Otherwise, because Chris Wallace and Bobby Williams were both there in Greenville at the same time, and they gave that promotion to Bobby Williams. But that could easily have been, you know, just like, okay, you've been in the organization.
Okay, and can I just say that we're officially at the podcast time that we're discussing the 48th best prospect in the system and having a spirited argument about him.
I had to bring up. I see him as a non-prospect, even at 58. I see him as a non-prospect. I don't know why you guys are giving him a C grade.
Well, the interesting thing is, like, Kyle Greenwalt, who's going to the Arizona Fall League, is graded out lower than Bobby Williams. So, you know, that may be...
Last year, he was pretty up there last year, if I remember correctly.
Well, I think it was 2 years ago, maybe it was last year, that he was the 31st prospect that Baseball America ranked in the system. So, I mean, he has gotten some respect in the past.
And, yeah, Baseball America did
a little too low. Well.
And, I mean, I probably did too. I know Baseball America, when they're... they listed Kyle Greenwald as a pitcher to really watch on the, I guess, the Javelinas or something like whatever team that we're affiliated with. He's definitely going to be considered a sleeper prospect coming into this season. He's got a decent fastball, and, you know, he's got pretty average stuff. But the thing is he's performed admirably in the worst pitcher's park in the entire league, or in the entire minor league baseball. So he's definitely got to watch for next year as he moves up to Corpus, which is more of a pitcher's park.
I think the other negative going against him is that he was drafted by Tim Pura in the 20th round.
Right.
What is with these 20th park. Round picks? Because that's... Who's
that certainly is a theme. I mean, J.D. Martinez with the 20th round... who was it?
Dan Addison.
Yeah. And now I'm going to need to look up who the 20th rounder was in 2008.
Christian, why don't you give us like a little brief overview of your article that you wrote, if you can remember anything from it, on Kyle Greenwald.
Well, the thing that we saw, I don't know if this still holds true, but he has a really good ground ball rate, which is obviously something that is going to help a pitcher to at least find a role as a back-of-the-rotation guy. The strikeout rate isn't horrible. over his minor league career, and he throws strikes. So, statistically, he profiles as a guy who could find a role in the back of the rotation. And from what I've read, he has a pretty decent fastball also, low 90s, I think it was. So, somebody to watch, but his performance hasn't been great this season, obviously. But keeping in mind that he's in the worst hitter's park in, or the most hitter-friendly park in minor league baseball.
Okay, just to clear up the confusion, the 20th round pick in 2008 was Shea Robin, a catcher from Vanderbilt. That's actually from the Woodlands, so he gets bonus points for that. But he did not sign, sadly. And he is not. He was not drafted.
He could have been high up
years.
Here if he would have signed.
I know.
He could be in the majors.
I know.
We have good luck in the 20th round.
Kyle Green wanted to make the majors, and he was drafted in 2007. Of course, on top of your grand ball rate discussion or point is that he also had the defense of Tim Pepera's drafts behind him. So
that's a good
maybe
point.
With a little Bobby Heck magic, he improves over the next couple of years.
Right. But see, maybe if he was a Bobby Heck pick, he would be in the majors by now. Because J.D. Martinez could be next year.
That is interesting. I think between the Tim Pepera drafts and the Bobby Heck, it seems that Bobby Heck and Ed Wade, for obvious reasons, don't typically like the draft selections from previous years. I think J.R. Tolles is a big example. I know me and Christian had a big deal with J.R. Tolles being sent down to AA when he was. I know that he projected to be a very not a very good hitter, but a decent hitter in the minor leagues or in the major leagues from his minor league numbers, and that which would obviously be a plus for the defensive catcher position. But for whatever reason, the organization decided that it was better that he end up in the minors, which is probably where he'll stay until he signs with another team.
Yeah, and also at one point, Baseball America even called him the best defensive catcher in the organization, which doesn't mean a whole lot at that point in time, but still, it's something.
Yeah, and I mean, I think he was definitely underrated defensively, especially with Q throwing him behind him, his defensive kind of paled in comparison to Q's. I think Q was definitely the better defensive catcher, but I think Tolles could have held his own.
And I'm with y'all. I was pretty upset when Tolles was sent down, and I wish him the best, and I really hope that we can find a trade partner just so he can get another opportunity, because I really like J.R. Tolles, and I think he was mistreated. But another guy to look at when we're talking about guys that were brought in during the Pepera era, that wasn't necessarily a draft pick, but was at a Latin American signee, is Douglas Arguello. Obviously, the front office isn't as high on him as what we have at the TCB have seen from him with his Double A stats. He easily could have been pulled up to Triple A at any point during the season, but it seemed like the Astros just aren't very high on him.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason for that is he has kind of gotten the rep as an injured guy. I think he's been injured for part of this season and part of last season. And that affects how organizations look at guys. I think that was a big issue of theirs with J.R. Tolles, because he's missed big chunks of time the last 2 years with injuries. And, I think that... And it was one of the reasons why, if I can segue to DJ Steele, why it's shocking to me that the organization views him as highly as they do when the guy has not been healthy since they drafted him. And, I gave him a 1 as my prospect rating, which was the lowest I gave out, and there were only one other guy that got a 1, and that was when Tim gave Bubby Williams a 1. So, I know that the tools are apparently there, as I just put in air quotes, but you can't see that. I just, you know, I've seen the guy a couple times in person. You look at his numbers, and outside of Lancaster, he's not produced.
Yeah, he's a textbook example of why baseball is about more than just tools. It's a game of skill, and it's also a game of endurance. And he has failed at both of those areas. So you can't have just tools, especially when you are a guy who is his age. I think he is 23 or 24, I forget which. And he's injured, and he probably won't be in AAA next year.
Yeah, I'm looking at his stats right now. This was age 23 season, but I'm pretty sure he's already 24. But his OPS this year was a 565. And I don't care what position you play, that's just not acceptable. He's probably playing underneath his tools, but I'm right close to giving him a 1 grade. I gave him a 2, but, I mean, I pretty much my whole thought process with considering outfielders in our organization.
I was a hair's breadth away.
I mean, like, one of his calling cards is he's supposed to have, you know, a pretty – one of his tools is power. And his ISO power this season was 0.087.
Oh.
That there's just not any power there.
Well, and you can see that. Like, if you watch him take at-bats and in batting practice, he doesn't profile to me as a power hitter. And actually, in the games I saw of him, J.B. Shuck actually looked better than Steele did, you know, in comparison. You know, he did the things that Steele was able to do as far as hitting and speed and all that. Shuck was doing it just as well, if not better, making better contact, you know, was faster, beat out a couple infield hits. And, you know, you can see how much the Astros like Shuck by, you know, what they've done with him this year. But I just could not be more disappointed in TJ Steele, especially for a guy that the organization tried to trump as the next Cesar Cedeno.
And that brings me to something I wanted to talk about. Was we saw something. Any of you guys watched that draft special where they showed some behind-the-scenes stuff on the 2010 draft?
No, I did not get to see it. I wanted to, but it's never on at a time that I've been able to watch it.
What channel is this on?
It was one of those Fox Sports Houston specials that they do sometimes called Spotlight.
Oh, I don't live anywhere near Houston, so no.
Okay, well, anyway, the point I was trying to make with this was that at one point they were showing a behind-the-scenes part in the war room in the draft. And, you know, throughout this entire special, Ed Wade and Bobby Heck are talking about how they have a philosophy to take, you know, high-ceiling guys and to not worry about whether a player is in high school or in college, but just to get the guy who has the highest ceiling and projects to be, you know, the best player. So, you know, they cut to this part at one point in this special in the war room in the draft, and they get to the supplemental pick, which is number 33, where we take Wasnicka, who none of us are particularly high on, I might add. And we get to that point where Al Smith is sitting there, and he says, we need to take the college hitter, or something along those lines. And Bobby Heck seems like he's objecting, and he says something about it being a philosophy of the organization, like he's trying to tactfully object. So Al Smith repeats himself and says, basically, we're going to take a college hitter. So it makes me wonder with TJ Steele, because Al Smith is the one who kept touting him as this five-tool prospect, whether he gets to have a little bit of say in some of these early picks and basically gets to pick his personal pet favorite player. And I wonder if that was the case with Wozniak. I'm not saying it necessarily was, but it makes me wonder.
So what you're saying is Tal Smith is our own personal Al Davis? That's a little scary to me.
He kind of, just from a picture, he kind of fits the profile.
Yep. Anyway, I don't want to really read the things and be a conspiracy theorist, but that's what it sounded like on that special. So,
and
And really, TJ Steele could, you know, turn out to be one of the biggest busts in the Bobby Heck era. He was the fourth Heck first draft, and while that very easily could have been, you know, Tal Smith's influence, like, as far as everyone else that we've drafted in the Bobby Heck era that highly, he is by far the worst.
Right.
Well, and with the name Steele, who can blame him? I mean, whew. I played Madden a couple of years ago, and after, you know, going through my first season in a draft, I drafted a cornerback with the name Steele just because he had the last name Steele. And, you know, when you think of Steele, you think of Steele. You know, like Steele the Draft or like Strong as Steele, or, you know, Steele is just a cool name.
Yeah, no, so no.
I think that's why he got drafted in the fourth round, which is maybe why Tal Smith said, we're going to draft him. He's, you know, he may have been more of a, you know, maybe a 14, 15 rounder, but he's like, he's got a cool name, we're drafting him.
His sixth cool is Steele.
Exactly.
So anyway, that's just, he was, it wasn't really necessarily in the entire organization, but it was Tal Smith who, in interviews, was the one who repeatedly kept saying that he was the best flight school prospect and so on.
Well, and, you know, that this could be disappointing for the team if you think about it as, you know, they've got this guy that wants to fit a profile and needs input on players and doesn't let Bobby Heck do exactly what he wants to do. But right. On the same token...
Smart worries too.
Yeah. At the same time, I mean, Steele was a fourth-round pick. Sure, there's probably guys they could have gotten later on in the fourth round or at the beginning of the fifth round that could have turned out better. But, you know, they've got 50 picks, and of those 50 guys, only a handful of them actually make the major leagues every time. So the percentages on these guys aren't always good enough to look at them as... Like, we would look at him as a bust of epic proportions, and certainly we have. He's the 64th-ranked player that we have on the list. But, you know, for most people, I don't think that there's the same urgency to see guys like Steele, who were drafted somewhat high, make the majors.
Yeah, and I'm not really... as concerned about Tal Smith influencing the Steele pick as just the impression that I got that he,
yeah.
I don't know if he was the one who wanted them to pick Wasnicka, but it sounded like he at very least pushed them to take a college hitter when they may have had somebody else on their board.
Well, when it was definitely much different than the other picks they considered high and were linked to. So I could certainly see that happening. And I wonder if he was one of the people that was linking the Astros to Michael Choice. If scouts were talking to him and that they kind of got the idea from him that the Astros liked Choice, even though they were in on DDJ the whole time.
Yeah, so I don't know if he just likes college players better or if it's, I don't know, it's, that was basically what he was saying, is we need to take a college hitter.
Mm-hmm. Well, that kind of wraps up what I wanted to talk about for this thing. Is there any guys that we didn't mention that you guys want to focus on before we go?
Jose Perdomo. I know he was kind of low on our ranking boards, but from what I looked at, he looked really impressive, especially going from the, I guess, the Dominican League to the Gulf League. Jose Perdomo, just from what I've seen as a starter versus being a reliever, he's really impressed with his numbers. In 59.1 innings, he had 69 strikeouts in the Gulf Coast League. His whip was well below one, or it was below one. I don't know if I want to say well below, but yeah. And his strikeout versus base on balls ratio was outstanding with a 3.45. Obviously, that's not going to carry to the major leagues, but I think it really shows he can be a middle of rotation starter as he progresses through the minor league system. If not, he might even be able to improve on some of these numbers as he progresses.
His strikeout rate is definitely really impressive in the Gulf Coast League. Obviously, at the lower levels of the system, you don't want to project too strongly, especially when you don't know the guy's stuff that he has, but
Right, and yeah. Jordan Lyles, I think Jordan Lyles is kind of the same way, where he was striking out more people than innings per pitch, but he's kind of come under that total.
Yeah, you can't find a single ball with numbers so far.
Especially as a starter, too. I think being a starter really kind of helps his stock a little bit.
I was going to say, I would like to see some scouting reports, because I don't know what kind of, whether he throws just 90 miles an hour, or whether it's 94, or what it is, you know?
Yeah, but, I mean, when you're looking at Dominican guys, you really just don't know anything, and that's why, like you said, you don't want to project too highly. But, like, even a ground ball rate, even as inaccurate as that probably is, especially for the Gulf Coast League, at 60% is very impressive. Combine that with the strikeout rate that he's posted. I mean, he's definitely somebody keep an eye on.
Definitely.
I know Farms. Do what?
I was just agreeing with you, saying definitely keep an eye on.
Yeah, and Farms was really high on him even last year when he was just in Summer League. And so, being that this was his first year, stateside, I wouldn't put it past him. To be a guy that comes into spring training and extending spring training, and eventually probably earns a spot at best, in the rotation at Tri-City next year.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy to point out. I know we're running too long, but one other prospect that we did have on the list was Tyler Burnett that we were talking about discussing.
Yeah, and Burnett was a guy that I added on there because I have heard some really good things about his raw power. It hasn't really translated into stats, but I do think he has slightly outperformed Wasnicka, and probably should have gotten the Player of the Month award for Tri-City when Enrique Kike Hernandez won. So, I mean, he walks quite a bit. He's also kind of advanced for Tri-City at 21 and a junior from Middle Tennessee State. And he hasn't hit very many home runs, though he does have quite a bit of doubles power. I don't know that he's going to steal as much as he's been doing as he goes on. But he's just a guy that I find really interesting and I think could do some good things. And I'm not higher than I am about Wasnicka, but I'm definitely keeping an eye on him as we go forward.
I think that's kind of what my same thing was along those lines, that if you look at his defensive positions, he's done 5 games at DH, 27 games at third base, and 36 at first base. So it looks like his future is possibly going to be at first base. If he's going to post a slugging percentage below 400 at first base, that's just not going to cut it. So he definitely needs to show that he has a little more power if he's going to be first baseman.
Actually, the reason that he plays first base a lot right now is pretty much because of Wasnicka, because they view him as a third baseman. I do have something on that. I've seen video on him, and he's a converted shortstop from college. And he is a good defensive third baseman, so he can definitely play that position.
I know one of the guys that from the Cats blog over there that comments frequently at the Cromwell boxes. I know he was talking about how with the addition of Marcus Nitifer, it's really helped as far as like the whole team defense, since they are in search of a playoff spot. Nitifer stays there at first base, and then Burnett is the best third base option they have, and then Wasnicka plays right field, and that's the best defensive setup that they can do. So I don't have any doubts as far as his defense, but yeah, he's definitely got to show a little bit more with his bat to be a true third base prospect.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Even looking past the first base, if he is a defensive plus third base, he's still got to show more power. Extra base power to really even stick at just third base, or we're going to have a Pedro Feliz of this year.
So, well, the one good thing about Burnett though is that he does draw walks. He has a fantastic walk strikeout ratio, which suggests, and I think that his batting average has been a little bit unlucky too, so it suggests that he'll have very good on-base percentage. He does need to show more power than he's shown, but he may not need to have, like, plus power in order to be a good regular at third base, especially if he has good defense.
Well, and I think, yeah, certainly with 17 doubles this year, it's that's not bad. He needs to get that batting average up, though, regardless, to really make me consider him anything, you know, but a low-level prospect.
Well, I mean, he is definitely making, you know, the Astros think about as far as, like, placement and assignments for next season. We definitely have a lot of guys who are going to be between, you know, third base, are going to be third basemen between Lancaster and Lexington next season with Wasinka, Burnett, Jonathan Meyer, maybe somebody like Johnny Medrano. All those guys could definitely all be factored into playing time at third base next season.
Well, and I do think a guy like Burnett probably goes to Lexington while Wasinka goes to Lancaster with Meyer, and they share time at third base there. And I think Burnett could make a jump similar to J.D. Martinez going straight from Lexington to Corpus if he performs well next year.
But do the Astros have the depth to actually allow Burnett to move over to third base? I know that, I think that's one of the things that's lacking in the Astros farm system is you know, some guys that are going to be over at first base. That can actually provide that pop,
right?
To stay at first base. I mean, it kind of seems like Burnett will be at first base, while some guy who has some pop, they're going to give a chance to stay at third base. And even though he's less of a defensive asset than Burnett is, he's going to provide a bit more pop, which is what the Astros.
The thing with Burnett though is, or with the positional. Translations in general is that when you put somebody at third base, like Brett Wallace was a third baseman as recently as a year ago, so you can keep Burnett at third base, which is where he has the most defensive value, and you can shift him over to first base almost at any time, and he'll be able to probably make that, you know, transition without too much trouble, even if he had to do it as high as AAA or the majors. Probably, since third base has the most positional value, you probably leave him there, and then it winds up that you need a first baseman, you go ahead and you move him over.
Well, I'm actually pretty comfortable with our first base depth at that area. I mean, we have Cody Hines, who will be in Lancaster probably next year. Maybe a guy like Brian Pellegrini, repeats, or Mike Ori. There's someone else in Lexington, I can't remember his name, that gets a lot of DH left field first base time. That will also be in that area. Marcus Nettifer will probably hold down first base pretty well next season in Lexington.
Cody Hensy.
Yeah, Cody Hensy, however you say his name.
Yeah.
You've also got guys like Ben Orloff and Andrew Semunik, who play a lot of different positions and can fill in at first base, but are probably not more than organizational depth at this point. And while you'd like to have, you know, pretty good hitting first baseman at every level of the minors, it's such a non-position defensively that if you don't have a good prospect there, you know, you just fill in there with a guy. And don't forget Telvin Nash either. I know they like him to play left field, but he could certainly move over to first base if they need some guys to hit there. But I wanted to say one last thing about Burnett. I do think that he's probably got more power than Wasinka does, but I think Wasinka is probably more of a professional hitter, if we want to call it that. You know, he's more polished, probably has a little better judge of the strike zone. But Burnett certainly has more raw power than him, even though it's not translated into the games.
So he's pretty much an interesting sleeper to watch for next season. He's not really a great prospect right now, but could shoot up the rankings if he has a good year.
Did you guys want to touch on Jonathan Villar and Jimmy Paredes or any of the other traded players. Well, I guess those are the only two minor leaguers.
Jimmy Paredes is another one. I'm going, what are you guys smoking? Because I don't see anything from him.
He's, if you're just looking at the stats, you're not going to get the whole picture on Paredes because he's one of those guys where he's got huge tools. Like, he's got fantastic tools. And unlike TJ Steele, he hasn't been injured a whole bunch. And more than that, he's younger. So, Justin hasn't been that bad. It's not which, great.
Which trade did he come? He came in a trade this last.
Lance Berkman.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and, but he's a second baseman, though, right?
Right. Right. But he also. Yeah. Some people think he's going to move to the outfield. His tools, though, scouts think he has great raw power. They also, you know, he also obviously, you can look at his stolen base numbers and you see that he has pretty good speed, which translates to good range on defense. He's raw defensively, so he needs to work on his footwork and on his instincts. And he does not draw walks and probably strikes out too much. His power hasn't emerged in the game to a huge extent, but his production hasn't been awful. So to me, he's a guy who has really good tools. He's basically a roll of the dice, maybe, you know, 5% chance of that he turns into a really good player, 90% chance that he busts. So, something like that.
He's definitely a guy that, at this point, he's more tools than production, which, you know, for people who put more weight on production and stats, you know, you're definitely going to be lower on him. I'm probably closer with you than I am with Christian in that, you know, that I really doubt that I have problems with what he's done so far, but he is someone who definitely could come go to Lancaster next year and really post some great numbers.
Well, and the counter Christian is that, you know, scouts may say one thing. You know, a lot of scouts said that Steven Strasburg had nice, clean cannons. And we see where that got him, especially with our discussion about the inverted W earlier.
Well, actually, there were some guys, there were conflicts in terms of that. Some scouts said he was low effort. Other people pointed out some of his issues, like the inverted W. I take scouts with a grain of salt, but I think you have to factor it in to a certain extent. Because there are some things, especially with young players, that aren't going to come through right away. And you have to look and say, you do try to project. One other thing I want to point out about Jimmy Paredes is that his production has risen significantly since the trade.
Yeah.
He's batting 301. He has 767 OPS. His strikeout rate is down since in 139 plate appearances since he was traded to Houston.
Well, and I think that's something certainly to keep in mind is that he has, throughout the years, from he signed with the Yankees at 18 years old, and he had around a mid-600 OPS, and his OPS has risen since then. So, I mean, that's certainly something to keep in mind, but I still don't see it. I mean, you know, I think, you know, like as always, next year will definitely be a defining moment for him.
Well, and think about
that. Yeah, so he's a C-plus on his upside, but he's not. He's a low-end C-plus, so that's pretty much how I see it.
Well, and just look at the Yankees' history with second basemen in Soriano and Cano. Like, those guys kind of came out of nowhere and have developed pretty good power and were pretty solid. So, go ahead.
Is that because of the... Because, you know, now that he's transferred over to the Houston minor league system, is that because of the Yankee coaching, or was that because that they just had that kind of upside?
The Yankee magic. That's what did it. No, I think, you know, that's totally subjective in me just trying to make a point when there's not really one. But I do think he does have some upside. I'm not quite as high on him as the rest of you. Yeah, I mean, I do think he's got some value, and I think he's young enough that we need to wait on him a little bit to see just what he's going to perform at, you know, what his performance level is going to be at. And you can never have too much second base depth, so
Well, his time's running out. He's 21 years old already. So.
Yeah.
He has a couple more years where he needs to break out in that time period. But I'm not saying he's a great prospect. I'm just saying that he's one of those guys where you roll the dice and you say, you know, he has a lot of potential. If he can put it together and have one of those huge breakout seasons like prospects sometimes do, then his tools could make him a star-level hitter.
Yeah, so, send him to Lancaster. He'll break out there.
Kidding. So basically, it's just adding more high-ceiling tools guys to the system, and you're hoping that if you add, like, 10 of those guys, one of them turns into something, you know? So, it's a tools death.
Well, I guess I just don't like the fact that his on-base percentage has never gotten above 340. I mean, he obviously can hit a little bit at the minor leagues above 300, but his on-base skills just impress me, which is probably why I've rated him so low.
Yeah, he doesn't roll walks, so he's really going to need to basically be like Miguel Tejada at second base. You know, Miguel Tejada in his prime, not this year's Miguel Tejada, obviously.
And hopefully not Miguel Tejada with the Butterfingers at second base.
Yeah.
Did you want to touch on Jonathan Villar real quick? Especially in comparison to somebody like Gio Meyer?
Yeah, he's right up there. Him and Gio Meyer are pretty much in a lock for the best shortstop prospect. Did you have any thoughts on him, Brooks?
Not really. I mean, he's got the upside. He's still really young, but I don't know. He's right there with Meyer. I have him right there. I like Meyer's upside a little bit better. I view Meyer a little bit better than I do Villar.
The thing for me with Villar is I've got fantastic reports on his defense. The kind of reports which suggest he could be one of the best defensive shortstops in all of baseball once he develops his skills a little bit more, because he's only 19 years old. He has incredible range, and he has a plus arm with good accuracy, from what I've heard. So, pretty much, he could be, if you've seen some of the ridiculous plays that Alcides Escobar has made for the Brewers this year, those are the kind of tools that he's reported to have. So, his value is not going to be found as much in the statistics because you can't really measure minor league defense very well.
Well, and I think another interesting question with him is he's got a lot of potential and he could be a very good defensive shortstop, but with what Haps brought to the rotation and getting Brett Wallace as well, do the Astros need him to pan out for that trade to still be a quality trade?
Right, he's pretty similar to Jimmy Paredes in that he just adds another high-ceiling guy. You just hope one of them works out. But one thing to keep in mind is that Baseball America, Jim Callis, said he thinks that Jonathan Villar is the Astros' second-best prospect for the end of this season. And I assume he's going by his defensive tools.
I mean, it would definitely have to be on tools for him to be the second best prospect. While, I mean, BA isn't nearly as high as probably on a lot of our other guys as we are. But to say he's the second best prospect, that's still, you know, that is still saying a whole lot on his tools. Me saying that Meyer, I view Meyer better is probably a little bit biased because we actually drafted Meyer. But, I mean, there's still a whole lot of upside in Villar. I'm not going to doubt him on that at all.
He obviously can steal some bases, but the biggest problem with him is that he strikes out all the time. So he'll need to lower that strikeout rate as he moves up the levels for him to be able to hit. But with his speed and his defense, if he can do that, he can be something special.
Yeah, he really can be something special. That strikeout rate is what pretty much alarms me the most. and why I like Meyer a little bit better. You know, walking and striking out is something that that translates to the upper levels a little bit better at times, and so that's why I really like to keep an eye out on stuff like that.
Yeah, I can agree with that. It's definitely concerning, so something that the Astros organization will need to work with him on. And what I've heard is that he takes huge swings for a guy who doesn't have the raw power to really drive the ball out of the ballpark. And maybe he just needs to try to not do so much and take Michael Bourne's curve a little bit more and use his good legs.
Okay, well, is there anything else you guys wanted to talk about? I think we've covered possibly every single topic we could have in the minor league system without going player by player through our entire list.
Yeah, pretty much. How long have we been at this? Like, what, 3 hours?
This one's about an hour and 50 minutes long, so... Wow. This is definitely going to be split up into about 3 or 4 podcasts over the next week.
This is debut one a day.
Yeah.
Over the next week and the next month.
Well, and it's definitely been as epic as the first TCB podcast should have been, so you guys deserve a lot of thanks for that. Is there anything you guys wanted to say before we finish up?
I still love Heath and Keuchel.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's my first attempt at his last name. In the correct way. I kept calling him Keuchel. His name's Keuchel.
I'm pretty sure it's Keuchel. I think that's how all my friends and guys that I know that are big Hog fans, I'm pretty sure that's what they say is Keuchel.
With the first name Dallas, I think he was meant to pitch in Houston. So
yeah,
hopefully he fulfills that premonition.
Well, and if there's anybody out there that knows how to pronounce a name that we have butchered in this podcast, feel free to email us. You can find a lot of our email addresses at the bottom of TCB's main page. And let us know how to pronounce it for the next time so that we don't make fools of ourselves again.
Like Mike Kavanisnica.
Exactly.
I will put the ring at it. Yeah.
I've been saying best nigga for the past 3 months.
Well, and heck, really drafted, like, quite possibly the most... You know, players with the hardest names to pronounce, like Fulte Novitski. Wait, no, it's okay in there. Never mind.
Didalowitz is also another one.
Yeah.
And so I think Austin Waits is going to be my favorite player until he hits his first slump.
Velasquez is probably another name that I'm probably pronouncing wrong. It sounds good, but it's probably wrong.
You should just start calling him B-Dub. I mean, that's...
B-Dub works for me.
I think they're close. I think it's Velasquez.
Yeah.
Velasquez. The 2008 draft was probably the issue with Castro's and Lyles and
Seton.
And Seton. Yep. And then we had Mir the next year, and this year it's just been, you know, a tongue twister.
It's been rough. All right, well, like I said, thank you guys very much for sticking this out and for 3 hours and recording the podcast. Hopefully this helps people as they read our stuff and think about the minor leagues. And we'll definitely be doing more of these, so be on the lookout for that.